Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am IndyStar Colts insider Jim Aiello, and I am joined by fellow insider and co-host Joel A. Erickson. Joel is back from vacation, so sorry we didn't do a podcast last week. I threatened to do a podcast on my own just on the rule changes that I'd want to see, and I will say that on Twitter, that was very well received. People wanted to, so maybe next time Joel is away, I will do one of those. I thought you guys were maybe being facetious, but it sounded like people wanted to hear me talk about 3-year contracts for running backs and safeties counting for 5 points. So
I think that if they weren't serious, I don't think they know who they're playing with. I think maybe they should be careful if they weren't serious. If they were serious, I think it would be an interesting listen, especially in a slow time. Just Jim going off on all the things he would change about the NFL, but
I got some overtime thoughts. I got some thoughts on safeties. I got some thoughts on a lot of things on
especially extra point goals. Especially without me around to be the traditionalist wet blanket.
You are
unfettered.
Listen, I already have Matt Eberflus's support on safeties. We know this. This is documented. So. If they raise safeties to 6 points, Justin Houston's a must resign.
That might be the happiest you've ever made, Matt Eberflus.
I think he doesn't smile very often, and he was very happy about that.
That might be the happiest anyone's ever made, Matt Eberflus with a question. He really liked that one.
He did.
That one made him very happy.
Now let's talk about making people unhappy. So I assume we have hordes of new listeners waiting for me to break down my defense of why the Colts should trade all of their picks for Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, Jim, I was gone for like a week, dude.
Some people, I think, maybe don't understand, first of all, my sense of humor, and two, what mock draft simulators are for, which is fun. They're just for fun, and I just wanted to see what it would take. Believe me, guys, I tried to trade less for Kyle Pitts, but it wouldn't let me, so I had to trade a lot. Joel's, let's just say this, Joel's obsession with Pitts made me curious as to what it would be like. And they'll never do it. I wasn't serious. I don't think the Colts would ever do the Ricky Williams trade for Kyle Pitts. But it would be kind of fun anyway. I'd like to see it.
The reaction to that tweet, by the way, despite being maybe the most prolific mock draft simulator of any writer in the country, I don't ever post the results because people take it as if it's like your prediction of what's going to happen.
Which is annoying
to me. But also that is what most mock drafts are. So I get it. I mean, a lot of people pitch it that way. The reaction to yours was, whew.
You know, the thing was, too, I had posted two kind of, like, traditional ones. One was, like, regular. One was trading back. And those were both very well received by the fan base. So I thought, let's push my luck and do something crazy and see what people think. And the reaction was not good. Even, like, our colleague on the beat, Mike Chappell, retweeted it and said, this is when pigs fly, right? And I said, absolutely, right alongside the Colts offense. Because... Kyle Pitts would take him to that level. I understand.
Jim, which one of us was on vacation last week? That's the real question, because it seems like there may have been some substance use from.
You're not the first person to suggest that, actually. I'll say this: when Joel is away, Jim has too much fun. So that's when I'm just like, well. It's a little bit slow time. I'm going to try some mock drafts just so I can learn these prospects a little bit. And then I got curious to see what would it be like to trade for Kyle.
Yeah. You can't put that stuff on Twitter because people lose their minds.
I've learned that now. So I will. They
can't take it for like a, they can't take it for what it is, which is you're just like, that one was very clearly a joke. I don't think any, Chris Ballard would ever do a Mike Ditka. I mean, come on.
I know. I even tweeted out the face. It's Chris Ballard, sad face, Frank Reich, happy face, which don't tell me he wouldn't be happy about getting Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So anyway, we don't have to talk about that anymore. I just thought it was fun. And with Joel away, I did silly things. But Joel's back, and we are going to talk about I think we're going to talk more about draft strategy today. I think obviously names will come up. There's been specific prospects that Joel and I are both interested in, given our research in the last couple of weeks and further for Joel especially. He's definitely got some guys he likes. I have some guys I like. But I think what we're going to do today is kind of lay out the scenarios that we would see in terms of addressing needs, where the Colts could address those needs, and how we think it's best to do so, and how we think Chris Ballard might do so, just given his draft history and tendencies. And there's going to be some cool content we'll have coming out. I have Chris Ballard's entire draft resume coming out, broken down by how many picks are still on the team versus how many other teams have it. There's like all kinds of like, you know, Big Ten versus SEC versus all. I mean, anything you could want to know about Chris Ballard's draft history will be in there. And then we're going to, Joel and I are going to get in like full crazy draft mode starting next week. He's got some great stuff breaking down edge guys. I'm breaking down tackles. He's actually already got a story up now. You guys should go check out about the pressure of the draft, which we're going to get into right now because of what Jim Irsay said recently. But anyway, lots of stuff. And then we'll conclude our coverage on Wednesday before the draft with a live mock draft like we did last year, where hopefully I will get the sound effects right this time. And, you know, that'll be more fun because I think I screwed them up last time. So I've learned my lesson. I know what I'm doing now with the sound effects. So we're going to do a live mock, and that'll be fun on here. So join us then. But anyway, Joel, we are here to talk about kind of draft strategy, but let's rewind before we get to that even and talk about what Jim Irsay talked about recently about the holes the Colts have, the needs they must address, and how they're going to do that, which is through the draft and the kind of pressure that puts on Chris Ballard and his staff.
Yeah, Irsay said he thinks they can get an offensive tackle. He thinks they can get a an edge rusher, and then he threw in cornerback too. He also thought that maybe they could get a cornerback. With what they have in the draft right now, and I mean, first thing he's saying immediate impact. He's saying guys that can play right away. He said flat out that the way the salary cap is and the way they're trying to pursue it, you just at some point, sometimes you just have to count on rookies to start. There's one problem with that as it stands right now, and I think it points towards draft strategy a little bit and where we're going to go. They only have two picks on the first 2 days.
Yep.
And while the Colts do have it, well, Chris Ballard does have a history of finding day one starters on the third day. It's really hard to count on that, I think.
Particularly the spots that they need it. Like finding a day one starter at edge is really hard, and even corner.
Yeah. And so that, I don't know. I have questions about like, they got to pick up more picks to do that. They've got to pick up more picks to do that. But the real reason I said, I don't know, is that what it comes down to is this is a team that has put an enormous amount of pressure on the draft. That's what the free agent strategy did. It put a lot of pressure on this draft to get it right. You have to hit. Now we can get into this a little bit, but I would say that if you are going to have somebody, if you're going to have him and you're going to have somebody put a lot of pressure on the draft, the Colts have the right one.
Yep.
Ballard has had a couple of drafts now where they've had immediate impact guys in the multiples, 2, 3, 4 guys. That's definitely the kind of guy you'd want to have in that spot if you're going to do this, but that's kind of what they need right now. They need a left tackle to come out of this. They need an edge rusher to come out of this. Corner less so. I think they need one going forward, but because Xavier Rhodes is only on a 1 year deal and he's in his 30s, but I don't think it's necessarily the biggest thing in the world that they get it right now. But if they want to get, even if they wanted to do something that I think you and I have kind of liked the idea of and get two edge guys.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough. Like it's going to be tough unless you start, it's going to be tough to count on doing that and getting that kind of production at those positions right away. Some of these positions he mentioned too, you're not going to get any real intense criticism of Chris Ballard's drafting from either Jim or I. I think he's the best drafter in the NFL over the last however many years. That's not the numbers I'll say, but I also just think it's pretty self-evident that's the way it's been.
Yeah.
But two positions he's had trouble with, if we're just being honest, are the positions of edge rusher and cornerback. Those are the positions where he spent 5 second round picks at those two positions. He's got one starter that most of the listeners out there hate, probably but they hate him, in Rocky Sin. They have Tyquan Lewis, who finally came on last year. And then you have Kamoko Ture, whose ankle injury is a big question mark. Ben Banigou, who has not played very much. And Quincy Wilson, who got traded in last year's draft for peanuts. Those are positions he's had trouble drafting. So if you want to be a pessimist and look at it that way, you can definitely say, well, I don't know that he can fill those with immediate impact guys because he hasn't done it yet. Now, do I think that that's always going to be the case with Ballard at those positions? No, I don't think he has huge blind spots at those positions that are somehow crippling.
He's historically drafted corner well, even like in Chicago, Basher and Tillman, some of the guys that he was in on. Daniel Manning was a converted corner and safety. Like, he has had a history of being good on corner. So it's cold streak right now, but he has done well.
Yeah. So he could get those guys. I think at some point his defensive line stuff is going to turn around too. One of the reasons I think it's been hard for them to draft defensive linemen is that they're picking them in the second round. It's usually easier in the first. There's a lot of pressure on this draft. The Colts, you wrote while I was out that the Colts are kind of running it back right now. But a couple of places where they're not running it back, at least as it stands right now while we're recording this, are left tackle and defensive end. And yeah, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to find immediate impact guys there. If he does it, if he pulls it off and they find 3 players at those positions who make immediate impacts the way that, Michael Pittman, Jonathan Taylor, and Julian Blackmon did last year, or God forbid, if he somehow pulls it off again where he gets a Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, Darius Leonard, Nyheim Hines draft, then any of you who want free agents to just kiss those goodbye.
never do it again. I agree with you on the pressure part of that breakdown. You're right. He's the right guy. I'll be writing about kind of the weird nature of this draft. I just spoke with a couple of agents it was kind of a formal interview, but I asked them about their interactions with Ballard and about how he works. And they both immediately were like easily one of the best talent evaluators in the NFL. And even given the nature of this draft, where there is less information out there, there simply is. They were talking about how they have to really push their clients in medicals, like their pro days, the stuff they're doing on their own. They have to send that out to teams because they're just not getting it as much as they used to in previous drafts. They said point blank, like, this is going to be a draft that determines who can really pick them, who's really good at identifying talent, who has the right processes, who does that. And they both said they believe that the Colts will, in 3 years, you'll see the Colts nailed this draft because they're better at it than most. So again, there is reason to think that they can respond to the pressure they're putting on themselves by leaving these holes that they have to address in the draft. However, as you pointed out, this will lead us to the next section of this. The next section of this podcast is they don't have enough picks to do that right now. They just don't. Fortunately, this class is deep in the areas that they needed to be deep in. It's deep in offensive tackles. I think it's extraordinarily deep in offensive tackles. Now, I don't think that the top end of the class is like last year's where there was 4 guys you want to take in the first round. Or at the top of the first round, but I do think that like first through second or third round, you can find starters. You can find guys you can plug in and feel pretty comfortable with week one. Maybe not guys that are going to be amazing right away or ever will be amazing. They might have cap ceilings, but you can find a guy that you can plug in next to Quentin Nelson or plug in next to Golinski and move Braden Smith to the left if that's what you want to do. but you can find those starters. Edgewise, I think there's a lot of talented guys in this draft. I don't think there's any home, like, I don't know if there's any, like, lock it down for sure, this is a guy, you know, edge rushers, but there's a lot of interesting, talented guys, guys who can do different kinds of things. So, and then getting to the corners.
One point I wanted to make before we get into the next part is there is a way that this draft goes where in 3 years it is the most successful draft, and next year Colts fans are ticked off.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it takes rookies a little bit of time to develop.
That's what Chris Ballard and Matt Eberflus, like, again, if they draft a pass rusher, they're the first people that would say, hey, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years for these guys to click.
Right. So there is a scenario here where they end up making the right picks for the long term, but in the short term in 2021, it hurts them. That's very possible. Just throw that out there.
For sure.
Because they have had guys like that before. I mean, I think when you look at Ballard's first draft in Indianapolis, after the first year, you would not have thought that Grover Stewart or Marlon Mack or Anthony Walker was going to be anything in Indianapolis. And quickly after that, you know, Walker and Mack that next year, and then Stewart another year after that.
Yeah.
Really important players for this team, you know?
Yep.
So they have had it. Tyquan Lewis is another one who was not very helpful to the roster his first 2 years. And then last year was a much, much better player. So you do have these guys develop down the line, and maybe that happens with Ben Banigou. Maybe Kamoko Ture's ankle is finally right and he can get back to where he was. So I think that's the other thing they're counting on, is young guys developing. But there's a way where Colts fans aren't happy because they didn't get the immediate impact they wanted. But then in two, 3 years, we're all looking back on it and going, okay, that draft was good. It just didn't provide the immediate help that they needed.
Right. It might not be the 2018 draft where you see immediate impact from Darius Leonard and Quentin Nelson and Nyheim Hines and Braden Smith. Like, it just, you just might not see that this year. The other thing I'll point out briefly is that Jim Irsay said in recent comments that they may not be done in free agency. There are some edge guys out there. Justin Houston is still out there. He did visit Baltimore. They didn't walk away with a deal. So it seems like the Ravens are going to wait, like a lot of other teams, till after. I don't know what the deadline is. Last year was April 27th, where free agents that you sign didn't count against the compensatory pick formula anymore. I would imagine it's around the same time this year. I don't know the date, but that's an important thing. It's like, if the Colts wanted to sign Justin Houston, it won't matter because he's one of their own free agents. But if they wanted to sign Olivier Vernon, who is coming off an Achilles injury, but was very effective last year, particularly in the second half, if they wait till after that deadline passes, it won't count against their comp pick formula and they can add him. So that's reportedly what the Ravens are doing with a guy like Justin Houston. They're going to wait. And the Colts might be doing. So there's guys, Ryan Kerrigan is still out there, who's somewhat interesting. Guys had 5 and 5.5 sacks the last couple of years. Vernon had 9 sacks. He was really good last year, but coming off that Achilles injury, it's going to be tough. Obviously Houston, we all know what he did. Other guys I thought were interesting were Alden Smith and Jadeveon Clowney, but obviously they're both gone now. So yeah, like I said, there are some interesting names out there for rushers if they wanted to go get them. They just have to, they might wait. And again, they might wait to see, hey, what happens in the draft? Do we get 2 edge rushers that we really like paired with the 2 we have, and let's roll the young guys out and go? Or do we not get the guys that we wanted? We missed out. Let's go get Justin Houston back, get some proven edge rush and go from there. So I think that remains a possibility. Though I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's something to keep in mind as we go forward here.
Yeah, I was told the Colts are still in the mix for Houston. I don't know what that means exactly. I don't know if they're just letting him test around and see if he ends up coming back on something lower than he wants to. That'd be my guess based on just the way the entirety of Colts free agency went.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they played it with almost all their free agents. It was let them test the open market, they weren't going to set the market on almost any of their own guys, and then see what they were worth. And then if they want, like with DeNico, okay, the market said he was worth X, they're going to try to match it. They came close, they didn't quite get there, but they let him go. But guy like Xavier Rhodes, I don't think he had the market that he wanted. Colts offered what they offered, and it seemed like the way it played out was the Colts kind of got him for a little less than he was hoping and for what they were exactly what they were hoping. So it can go both ways, which we've seen with the DeNico.
Obviously they can still add free agents. I don't think anybody that they're going to get at this point, barring a trade or a surprise, or I shouldn't say, I think there's one guy they could get that's like a real difference maker for them. And it's Zach Ertz, who the Eagles are continuing to hold hostage for no apparent reason. Actually, I shouldn't say no apparent reason. I think the Eagles are holding Zach Ertz hostage too, because Howie Roseman is convinced that he can fulfill one of his wish dreams this offseason by getting way more for a player than the league wants to pay. But it's not going to, I just don't think it's going to happen. But other than that, I think other than a trade, it's hard to see somebody, it's hard to see them getting a real difference. The guys they signed at this time last year were very valuable for them. TJ Carey's, the Trey Burton's, like some of these guys were really valuable players for them. Not the sort of difference makers that I think people want off the edge. And I don't think anyone is looking at Justin Houston or Ryan Kerrigan or someone like that as like a true every down, not every down, but a true like difference maker. I think that's a complementary piece at this point in their careers.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And so, yeah, again, pressure on the draft. Pressure on the draft, and pressure that's not necessary. Pressure that's pretty hard to live up to. I am sure that when we talk to Chris Ballard, he'll be like, "No, there's no pressure," but there is. I think there is a little bit. Especially the position that scares me the most is edge rush, and has been for a while.
Right. That's a good segue into what we're going to talk about for terms of the draft strategy. I will add one more thing though. In terms, you mentioned Trey Burton and Zach Ertz. I think they're waiting on Zach Ertz to see what happens. And I think if it doesn't work out, that Trey Burton might come back. I think that's an option. You know, tight ends typically take a couple of years to even figure it out in the NFL. And the Colts definitely need to move tight end. Like Frank Reich was explicitly said on the radio, we are in the position, we are in the market for a playmaking tight end. Now, I don't think Trey Burton is what maybe he wanted to bring back. Like option number one, I think Ertz is probably option number one at that point, but if he's, you know, two or three, they might end up doing that. But again, something to keep in mind as we go into this. But let's get into the draft strategy where you and I have conducted, and like I said, this is maybe the benefit of doing these mock drafts, as much as we make fun of them and they are silly and people don't know what they're talking about a lot of the time. I think what we were able to do when we do those mocks is see that, hey, this is a pretty talent-rich draft class, especially in the areas where the Colts need it. It definitely seems to be helpful in addressing those needs if the Colts trade back.
Yes. I want to start out by saying this, that I am not a draft Nick who watches a lot of film on draft prospects. I have some opinions that are mostly based on watching college football. I have some guys I like most based mostly on watching college football. But I don't get deep in the weeds on prospects, because I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't think that even if I really, 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 really went after it, I don't think that I'd be on the level of Ballard or one of the scouts or something like that. I'll just be honest with you. But that being said, just from reading people who are draft analysts and stuff like that, I worry about the edge rush, because I feel like the edge rush is that there's a lot of guys who either test really well and have zero production, or have lots of production and don't test well, or have, in the case of a guy that I think a lot of people like a lot for the Colts, some pretty scary injury history.
You're referring to a guy who retired once from football?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Jalen Phillips.
I like Jalen Phillips a lot. There's a lot to like, but that is scary. There's not that.
It feels like there's a lot of dice rolling at edge to me. Now, again, if I'm going to pick somebody to roll the dice in the NFL, I'm going to pick Ballard.
This is where I think I'm with you. I think trade back, and we're going to get into why. But if I'm going to make the case for staying where you are at 21, right, it's because I think I completely agree with your analysis of the edge. I think there's some really like twitchy, bendy guys who are just like athletic freaks. Quiddy Pay is like one of those guys. You're just like, holy cow. Like this guy looks like an Adonis and he moves like one, or, you know, incredible, but the production wasn't maybe what you were hoping for. Here's my thing. If Chris Ballard thinks there are only one or two legit edge guys in this draft, everybody else is total roll of the dice, then get him at 21. get him. Like, if you think there's that guy and you don't like, yeah, everybody else comes with so many question marks, but we're sure about this guy, get him. Stay at 21, draft your edge guy and go. If you're to me, this is just my analysis of it. If there's a tackle that you love at 21, trade back, forget it. Like, there'll be other tackles that you really, really like later. And there are going to be a lot of edge guys that are really interesting later. You can do it that way. But to me, it's the only argument for staying at 21, in my opinion, is you just find an edge guy you think is going to be a difference maker, and you're just going to grab him now because you don't want to roll the dice later. That's all I can come up with for staying at 21. I don't know what you think.
Well, I see, the thing is, I think you can stay at 21 and take that player, and then you can still trade down later. So get more picks later.
That's true. Yeah.
If they make their pick at 21, I will immediately put whichever one of us is supposed to, whichever one of us writes that story. We haven't gone through that yet. But whoever writes that story would then immediately be on pre-writing the trade down from 54 story.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with that. If you think a pass rusher is the guy, then yes, you do. You take them. You don't trade down at all costs, because that's such a premium position and so hard to find that if you're convinced, you take the guy. That being said, I do just want more picks. Every time I do one of these things, I want more picks. I would prefer to have them on the first. I would prefer to pick one up on the second day. But I'll take more picks just about anywhere. Especially given Ballard's history of finding players in the fourth, fifth rounds. He's done a good job of it over the years. And so I'd like to trade down. One of the other things I want to say about some of these twitchy guys, what I think that one of the things that I haven't gotten an answer from or noticed an answer from is I feel like there's a ton of Montez Sweat comparisons.
A lot of them. Yep.
I feel like people say Quiddy Pay is Montez Sweat and Jason Owa is Montez Sweat and yep. Jalen Phillips is Montez Sweat. Phillips might be more like Montez Sweat.
Because of the risk.
Well, the risk.
The nature of the risk, you mean? Yeah.
The risk. Just full disclosure, if anybody doesn't remember, the reason the Colts traded out at 26 instead of picking Montez Sweat, who went at 26, is that they couldn't, their doctors couldn't clear his heart. Which was reported. I mean, it was reported at the time that lots of NFL teams felt that way, but the Colts were one of them. But the other difference. The real difference I see between some of those guys and Sweat is Sweat had 22 and a half sacks his last 2 years at Mississippi State. He had real dominant on-field production in the SEC. And some of these other guys, when you read it, it's like, man, he looks the part, and sometimes it looks great, but they just doesn't have the numbers. And that worries me a little bit if I'm drafting. I mean, obviously you're looking for traits on tape, all that stuff, but it for me, it would be a reason to be concerned if the traits aren't translating into production. Montez Sweat's traits translated into production at Mississippi State. He had a ton of production at Mississippi State.
I agree. I mean, the fact that you mentioned Penn State kid, Owa, if that's what I'm saying it right. I don't know if it was Owe or Owe, but anyway.
I could be saying it wrong. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I'm looking at the pronunciation guide and they don't have one for him, so I'm guessing. It's just, yeah. So anyway, we'll move on from that. He is also a freaky, ridiculous athlete who had, do you know how many sacks he had last year?
Zero.
He had no sacks. He had 6.5 tackles for loss. I think he's going to be a guy that, like, you'll love having, you know, come down the edge when he's unblocked. And, you know, if there's like a zone run to the right and he's coming off the left edge, he'll chase it down. He's got some of that in him, but the lack of, and that's awesome. Like I said, and if he's got all the traits, maybe you can teach him some pass rush moves, but boy, that seems like a risk in high first or late first and high second to guy who didn't have any sacks last year.
Yeah, that's the hard part with this edge class is there's a lot of guys like this who are athletic freaks and, you know, their testing scores are off the charts, but you're going, where's the big season? Where's the big season with production, you know?
Yeah. Quiddy Pay had two sacks last year, just so everybody knows.
And I think he had five the year before that.
He had he only played four games, I should say that, and he had 6.5 in 12 games. So, but he finishes 4 years.
I mean, that's a little better, but we're still not at sweat levels of production, you know?
Totally agree. I think that's why so many people like Ojulari, is because he put up 8.5 sacks in the SEC last year in 10 games, playing against some great tackles, obviously, in the SEC. So there's a reason why he's usually number one. But, and again, this is just from what I've read, a lot of people tend to see him more as a 3-4 guy than a 4-3 guy. So might be an issue for the Colts. But again, like you said, even that is not overwhelming numbers.
Yeah, and so that's sort of my concern with the edge class. We kind of went down a rabbit trail here a little bit, but yeah. Part of the thing that I want to trade down then is not sure. And if I don't know if I'm sure about a player at 21, like when I've done these simulators now, I'll admit I don't have strong, super hard convictions, or I have not taken the time, full disclosure, to do a 300 player draft board of my own. So I'm kind of working off what other people are saying, but a lot of times when I'm doing the simulator and I get to 21, I look at the board of available players. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not really excited about any of these guys.
Yeah. I get that.
And when that happens, if you're in the draft room, you are just begging that phone to ring. You're begging that phone to ring so you can trade down. Chris Ballard obviously is thinking that anyway. I don't think we need to say anything other than just look at his draft history. The man trades down. It's just what he does. Yep. He likes picks. He likes to have lots of picks. And every time I do one of these, I want more picks because I want to have a chance to get more players that are available.
For a while, I've been kind of teasing the idea of, and I've said it out loud many times on this podcast, just that I thought it might be harder to trade back. Because people will be hesitant. I think just because of what Joel was saying, and I kind of feel the same way he does, is there's a lot of dice rolls. So take as many of them as you can, throw as many darts as possible. However, in talking to a few different agents I'm talking to a few different agents, they're getting the impression it might be the other way, that the draft boards are going to be shrunken because of the lack of information, lack of amount of people have seen. And if the draft boards are smaller than traditional, we're gonna ask Chris Ballard about this when we get a chance to. But if the draft boards are smaller than they used to be, then might be teams eager to trade up to make sure they get a guy that they know they like, as opposed to waiting until later. Now that might come later in the draft too. I don't know. But point is, with a lot of uncertainty in this draft, more than usual, there might be teams that are saying, let's just get the guy we know we feel good about. And we'll trade up to do it, to make sure we get that guy. That might be the opening that Chris Ballard and the Colts need, because I think even in that situation, they're going to want to trade back. Even in the situation of this year's draft, where the information is not as easy to access as it has been in years past, I think they're still going to want to trade back.
I've seen a lot of people say that they don't think there's going to be much opportunity to trade back for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I've read that every year I've covered the draft right about now. And somehow Chris Ballard, somehow John Schneider, somehow the New England Patriots always have partners willing to trade up somehow. And so I'll be more surprised if everyone's right than if they're wrong. I'm expecting there to be trade availabilities. And without even trying to analyze it too deeply, I'm just going off of there's always chances. People always trade back. I mean, Chris Ballard trades back, like, I don't know. It's his favorite thing.
I can tell you, I have it. It's in my resume. I pulled it up for just this occasion. So he's made 16 trades, either during the draft or in the months leading up to the draft. Eight of them, half. Have been trading back to collect additional picks, just straight trade backs. Three more of them have been sending a veteran away to acquire additional picks. So 11 of the 16 trades he's made in this instance have been acquiring additional picks. A lot of times. That's a lot.
Yeah, he's going to trade back. Also, I saw a crazy stat today that Dave Gettleman has never traded down.
Yeah, I know. He trades up a lot, usually for defensive linemen.
Which doesn't really have anything to do with the Colts. It's shocking.
Yeah.
You've been a GM for a long time. And he's never, ever traded down. I don't know. That's just fascinating to me. Sometimes it's fascinating to go. Like, as a Colts reporter, we are automatically expecting Ballard to think about trading down. We just don't.
And mostly because almost every year before the draft, he says, I'd like to have more picks.
And it's just weird. It was weird seeing that and realizing that if you're a Giants writer, you haven't even entertained that scenario because you know you won't do it. Weird. Just weird.
Also, anyway, go ahead.
That was an aside. I just think if you could somehow get another pick in the third round, whether it's trading down, you'd love to get another one in the second, but even if it's in a third, then you have a better chance at that offensive tackle, edge rusher, cornerback that Ursay was talking about. I think corner is a deep position too, based on what I've reported and read just from talking to draft analysts and stuff, is that it's a deep position and you might be able to get them. So obviously wide receiver is deep. If you want receivers, it's going to be a lot like last year's, where there's a lot of them available. I don't think tight end is supposed to be all that deep. Like you said, though, it's hard to count on a rookie tight end to make an impact.
After Pitts, it's like tier one, tier two is Freiermuth pretty much by himself. And then after that, I think it's kind of like a pick your poison, just from what I've seen at least.
And when it's like that, I just want more picks. I want more picks. I want more shots. Because I do think that there's a lot of spots that can be addressed here. It's not just the immediate obvious needs for this year. Corner, I don't think the corners, I don't think that Jim Irsay is saying they need an impact corner because of Rockiston. I think that plays a little bit into it, but I think it's more because Xavier Rhodes is in a one-year deal. He's in his third. They want to have another guy there. That's what I think. That's why I think corner is important. There are these positions where there's people going into their free agent year. Like they picked Jonathan Taylor last year with 1 year left on Marlon Mack's deal. They picked Julian Blackman with 1 year left on Malik Hooker's deal. These picks, that's why Ballard wants so many picks, is because he's not just thinking about this year's needs. He's thinking about next year's needs.
That's an interesting part. It's actually a story I'm writing next week about, is like, if you want to know where the Colts might go, look at who's coming up in free agency. And crazily, it's going to be defensive end. I mean, that's one. You know, Kamoko Ture is somehow in a contract here. So is Tyquan Lewis. It seems nuts, but those two guys are there. So is Al-Kadeen Muhammad. Those are your three presumed starters right now, I would think. The three guys that you would see rotating through the most, those guys are all in contract years. Who are the other ones that are surprised? Tight end. Mo'Ali Cox, assuming he signs his tender, which he will. And Jack Doyle, also playing in their final year. So tight ends, they have none other than the guys they have not on the 53-man roster. That's something you should keep in mind. Running back, they're all free agents except Jonathan Taylor. Naeem Hines is in the final year of his deal. Again, he could get extended. I'm not saying he won't, but just keep it in mind. Like, they might target somebody as a future Naeem Hines replacement. Marlon Mack is in a free agent year. Jordan Wilkins is in a free agent year. That's interesting. At wide receiver, T.Y. Hilton's on a 1 year deal. Zach Pascal will sign his RFA tender, assuming soon, and he'll be a free agent. Like, there's a lot of guys here that they're counting on to help this year, but that they are going to be gone next year. So some sneaky needs, I would say, I guess, for the Colts, just in terms of trying to restock the cupboard guys who are leaving next year.
And that's why I want more picks. Yeah. I want to keep just firing. I colored on liking picks and trying to make a lot of picks, because the more picks you have, the less you have to do down the line to refurbish your roster in free agency. The more you can say, okay, it's okay to let this guy go.
Which they do.
And the other thing is sometimes when you do that, you end up finding a better player than the good starter you already have. I think Bobby Okereke. Yep. Walker, very solid starter for the Colts. Bobby Okereke's better fit and he's a better player for them. And when they made that pick, I think everyone was like, oh, I didn't see them drafting a linebacker. But Anthony Walker was able to move on. The Colts feel like they've upgraded at that position. It's a good pick.
Yeah, it'll happen. I mean, again, you mentioned the corner situation. There's a lot of spots. There just truly are because of the nature of the deals the Colts do, which are short a lot of the time, and a lot of them are one-year deals. So I didn't mention Rochelle, but like that's another guy in the defensive end who is one-year deal. Like they do have – not only do they have needs for this year, but they do have – they're going to have needs for next year just because guys are going to be walking out the door. And as we all know and have talked about, they're going to have less salary cap space starting next – not this season, but next – after having worked on the extensions with Braden Smith, you'd assume Quentin Nelson, Darius Leonard, maybe Nyheim Hines, a couple other guys, you know, could fit the bill there too. Like I wouldn't, if Tyquan Lewis has a Grover Stewart-esque breakout in the middle of this year, where he plays really well for eight games on the edge. He's, you know, he's going to finish with seven or eight sacks and plays the run really well. I could see them extending him in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, they don't have anybody like that. They don't have, you know, again, Kamoko, if he starts to, you know, if you're Kamoko and you have a monster, you're, you go to free agency because you're going to get super paid. But I could see, like I said, if they tried to, if he had a good start to the season, you could see them trying to work out an extension with him. But they just have a lot of needs. Not again, I think it's a great point you brought up. It's very important to remember that it's not just about 2021 for the Colts. It's about 2022 and beyond as well. When you
Ballard says all the time that they plan 3 years out with the cap. Part of planning 3 years out with the cap is that they're also planning for who they can let go and who they're going to have to resign. That's right. Just, you cannot plan for the cap without doing that.
Who they draft is a good indicator of who they think they can let go and who they can keep.
Yeah.
It's not the only indicator, but it's a good one.
Right. Right. Like they're probably not going to pick a left guard. They might pick a guard because Mark is headed into the last year of his deal, but they're probably not picking someone that can take over for Quentin Nelson. I feel 9.9% sure that they're not trying to replace Quentin Nelson.
Not trying to replace him, but if they do take a really, you know, say they take Tucker from USC, maybe that's the move that they make Quentin Nelson the left tackle. I still don't think that's what they're going to do, but maybe they say, hey, there's a great guard here, let's get him and then see what happens.
Tucker, they're not. They probably don't feel like they need to take a defensive tackle, a three tech defensive tackle, super high.
I agree. I like finding one like in the fourth round, but
yeah, they feel like they're set at that position for the foreseeable future.
This is how I feel. Like I got into some of the stuff on Twitter with people with a strong safety. I like, there's a lot of people that have listed it as a need. And I saw somebody like, I think it was on NFL. Yeah. I think it was NFL Network person kind of did a Colts mock draft. And his second round pick was a safety, somebody who would be great to slide in and start next to Julian Blackman. And I was like, Corey Willis is really good. Like he's not, again, is he like all pro? No, but he's really good. Like could they use depth there? For sure. Absolutely. Draft a safety. I'm all for it, but you don't need to find a guy who can start next to Julian Blackman. You have one.
Also the Colts love him.
Yeah.
They love Corey Willis. Like deep, unabiding love,
and they should.
They think he is as good a player person as they've ever drafted. I'd be shocked if they're trying hard to replace Kari.
Yeah, I agree. And also, somebody suggested to me on Twitter that it might be the impact plays that Julian Blackman made that made people forget about Kari. I get what you're saying.
The same amount.
They had the same amount. It's exactly right. Now, Julian's came in some crazy, you know, important times at the end of games, but they both had two interceptions and forced a fumble. So they're right. Again, Blackman's were, you know, forced the fumble in the Packers game at the end, sealed the deal against the Bengals. Like, I know his plays were big. I get it. But Kari Willis also had three monster plays for the Colts. So it's something to keep in
mind. Also had two sacks. Kari Willis also had two sacks.
Yeah. And, I mean, he wasn't that far away from 100 tackles. It was like 85, 86, something like that.
He might have had it if he hadn't had to miss two games due to injury. Like you said, it's the moments. It's when Blackman's interceptions happened more than it has to do with the way Willis actually played.
I think you could make a case that Kari had the better, more consistent season than Blackman. And I like Blackman a lot. I think they're both going to be
really good. I think that's true. I think that's inevitably true. I don't remember Blackman making it, you know, the real impact. Other than after the Packers fumble, that was about it.
Hopefully, you know, the next year he takes the leap. We're getting him Julian Blackman. But I'm just curious, you know, you wonder about, and Malik Hooker was a lot of the injury, but he had such a great rookie season. I think everybody just assumed he was going to be a star, and it didn't work out. Obviously, the injury being a huge part of that.
Right. Blackman, you assume, is going to develop and get better, but and continue to make more of those plays. But the idea that Kari Willis doesn't make enough of them is just.
I totally agree. I just wanted to get
If you're making that argument, you're saying that Blackman was much more productive than Willis last year, and it's just not true.
I had somebody on Twitter, and I can't remember who, and I apologize, but made the great point. Like, that's an immediate tell for you didn't watch the Colts last year, is not knowing they have a good, strong safety.
And actually, if I was giving anybody advice who's out there in Colts, who's out there as a Colts fan trying to figure out what the Colts might do, pay attention to us. Pay attention to local guys when talking about needs. Do not pay attention to draft analysts. They have to watch 350 players a year and rank them. They don't know what's going on with the Colts. They don't know. They don't know. They don't have enough time to actually know. They just don't. Mel Kiper does not know the Colts roster very well. He just doesn't. Because he's watching 400 prospects and ranking them. He doesn't have the time to know those guys. And so, like, if you're looking for needs, listen to what Ballard says, listen to what Irsay just said. I mean, I think Colts fans by now should know that Jim Irsay doesn't have much of a filter. If he says offensive tackle, edge rusher, and cornerback, probably a hint.
I totally agree. And so that's why I'm listening to, by the way, when he says, hey, we might sign Justin or another free agent. Keep your ear to the ground. I also would say the one thing that they haven't done that he has been pretty adamant about was he cited Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, not directly, but mentioned the two guys in Kansas City. It was about as direct as you without saying their names. And they haven't found those guys yet. Now, again, I'm not saying that they don't have some talented players on their own roster. They definitely do. But he mentioned the desire to add one of those guys, and they haven't. So let me ask you this. I meant to do this. This is when I ended up being silly and drafting Kyle Pitts instead of doing what I was intending to do. But what I intended to do was to see if I could trade back either early second, late first, draft a wide receiver in that spot, and then try to address the need just to see if it might work out. As opposed
to get what you wanted.
Yeah. As opposed to getting a receiver in like the third or fourth round, who you might like too. And again, you could do it that way. I wanted to see if they, and actually I was going to try and say, like, if I stuck at 21, could I end up with like Waddle? Probably not. But could I end up with like Waddle and then address my needs later? I don't know if they could. Would you be stunned if that happened?
Yes.
I think so too, but I'm curious based on what Irsay said.
Mostly because of the depth of the receiver class.
Yeah. That's another great class.
That's really what's driving that for me. There's a receiver that I keep seeing going off in the fourth round that I think is really good. And I feel like if he's going off in the fourth round, that means it's pretty deep. And this, again, this is nothing to do with like me watching all the right, like traits and pro days and blah, 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 and all that stuff. I just have watched enough Auburn football to know that Seth Williams makes a lot of catches and his quarterback was garbage. No offense to Bo. Well, some offense to Bo Nix. some offense to Bo Nix, but he's a big play type of guy, and that interests me. But if you can get if that kind of player is going up, like Seth Williams to me is much better. I covered Auburn, so I have a pretty good knowledge of what Auburn's put in the NFL at receiver the last however many years. If people think Seth Williams is really going off the board in the fourth round, I think Sam Coates went off the board in the third round of the Steelers whenever he came out. And Seth Williams is just a much better player. It's not close for me in terms of who's better, which means that the only thing that can mean, if you're asking me, that the depth of the receiver class is there. I'd be trying to go higher for linemen and edge rush. I think Ballard thinks that you have to really, well, I don't think, so far, Ballard has invested a lot. Like, he invests in the offensive line. High picks, high money. I think that's the way I would think. It's an interesting thing. This is sometimes why you're, you got killed for your, people saying, how dare Jim try to, get rid of all of our picks for Kyle Pitts. But this is why it's probably better for you to do some of this. You're a little bit more creative. I'll be honest, when I do these things, I am looking at tackle and edge right away. Maybe corner. No. Every while I picked a corner, but other than that.
And frankly, I have two. That's mostly what I've done. I'm just trying to take into account what we've heard from Jim Irsay. I'll also take into this account, like, his first pick last year, again, traded his first round pick for a defensive lineman. I get that. But the first pick of the Colts last year, wide receiver. Yeah. Michael Pittman. Like, it's not totally crazy to think that he might do it. Now, they brought back T.Y. Hilton. So now there are at least four receivers that they like deep. I don't want to say negative things about Desmond Patman. I think there are potentially he could be fine. I don't know yet, but four receivers that they like deep. So I think the odds of them drafting a receiver really high are pretty low. But as we talked about, Pascal, Hilton, free agents at the end of the year.
You wanted to see if you could pull it off.
Yeah, I just want to see. Like I said, would it make Campbell? You haven't seen. Like, I know they still love Paris, and again, we all saw the impact he could have in that first like game and a half that he played last year. But again, he hasn't proven. He's played 9 games in 32 in his first 2 seasons. So if you were to ask Chris Ballard after the draft, after he took a receiver in the first round, like, what are you thinking? He's like, well, T.Y.'s a free agent. He's getting older. Zach Pascal's a free agent. We like him, but you know, he's not an explosive playmaker. We love Pittman. Campbell gets hurt a lot. We thought we needed somebody else. In my brain, I could get my head wrapped. Again, 95% don't think that's going to happen. But I'm just trying to, like, okay, what are some other possibilities? What other ways could this play out?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at it. It's probably a good way to look at it, because Ballard often zigs when everybody else says he's going to zag. That's a fairly consistent Ballard thing.
But given the very specific needs they have right now, we're like, they have very specific holes, in my opinion, at tackle, at edge, and a little bit at corner. I just don't know that you can afford to do that, but I could be wrong.
It'd be interesting. The thing is, it'd be really interesting because I feel like a lot for basically since I've been covering the Colts, I feel like people have been clamoring for them to go big on the playmakers and maybe not be so obsessed with the lines the way he is.
Well, again, Pittman and Taylor in his first 2 picks last year, you have to give him credit. You have to give him some credit for doing it. He did. He went for playmakers and he got a couple, I think. Pittman still has a little bit more to prove than Taylor does, but still, I think very good players, both of them. So he has splurged on those. And again, he drafted Paris Campbell the year before in the second round. So he has spent some high capital on playmakers, much as he probably hates doing it. He might. I don't know. Again, like, maybe Chris Ballard really, really, really loves Rashad Bateman. Maybe he just loves him. I don't know. I like Rashad Bateman quite a bit. But I also am kind of picky when it comes to wide receivers and what I like, which is, just tell you guys now, if he's under 6 feet, I have a hard time. So
Jim hates short people. That's the take of this entire podcast.
I'm under 6 feet.
Is this something that you might need to work out in a place that's not a podcast?
It's a personal thing. Yes, you're right. I should take this somewhere else. I'm sorry. Sorry. Projecting on other receivers. No, again, like, and T.Y. Hilton's a perfect example of a guy who could succeed at an incredibly great level at under 6 feet. But I think
T.Y. might be listed at 6 feet.
No, T.Y.'s got to be 5'10". I'm taller than T.Y. Hilton, by the way.
I agree, but I thought I remember reading him at 6 feet at some point.
No, at NFL.com, they have him listed at 5'10".
Oh, okay.
So, if
69 and a half inches. Yep. So yeah, 5'10" and a little bit.
I'm not saying guys under 6 feet can't succeed. I just feel like the number of them who do it's rarer than guys who are over 6 feet. So I tend to.
You said you weren't interested, Jim.
I just don't want them. Like I said, if I have my pick, give me 6'2" Rashad Bateman.
Jim doesn't like short people.
Correct.
That's the takeaway from this.
My wife is barely over 5 feet. My wife is barely over 5 feet, just so we're clear. And my son is not even like 3 feet yet. So
does she listen to the podcast? Because you may have some damage control to do after this.
She most certainly does not listen to this podcast. She gets plenty of me in real life. But no, like I said, anyway, that's just we'll get into more specific prospects that we do like in the future here. But I would just wanted to see if you thought it was possible that say they do trade back from 21 to 29 with like Miami, who's got a million picks, and then Bateman's there at 29. And again, I know that's probably not going to happen, but just throwing it out there. Like
no one is going to like that I say this, but I say it every year and I'm about to do it again. I think literally almost anything could happen.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And I think last year, I think anybody who says they have to go a certain way is like my evidence against that is last year. Who had them picking a running back with their second pick last year?
Trading up even.
Who had them giving up a pick to get a running back?
Yeah.
No one did. No one. We all said running back wasn't a spot. The year before that, we all said they didn't need a linebacker and they drafted Okereke. So if I've learned anything from covering Colts drafts, it's that whatever I think they need, Ballard might disagree with me.
Right. Top three rounds, he might spend it on a place you don't think that they will, at least one time.
And so that means that and this is another thing that people are going to hate, and they're going to hate it right after the draft is over and we do our draft wrap-up podcast. I'm not going to pass judgment on it if he does.
No, I'm with you. Let me ask you another like shape of draft question, just out of curiosity. And I think I know your answer because I know where you come from and I know who you are as a person at NFL teams. Are you interested potentially in a quarterback in the third or fourth round?
No.
No. Oh, okay. I thought maybe you'd say yes.
No, not really.
You don't want to become the next like Green Bay Packers, Eagles, pumping them out?
Well, see, the thing about the Green Bay Packers, and this is what I think Howie Roseman missed on with his quarterback factory thing. The Packers didn't do that by drafting guys highly. Matt Hasselbeck, I'm looking this up right now to back myself up. Matt Hasselbeck, sixth round. Mark Brunell. This is going to take a little longer.
If you have two examples, I'll just give it to you.
Mark Brunell was a fifth round pick.
Okay. Well, let me change the question then. Fifth or sixth round pick on a quarterback.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Well, do you like the idea?
Aaron Brooks, fourth round.
Okay. So four through seven, say, do you like the idea of adding a quarterback?
Yeah, sure.
So just not in day one or day two.
Yeah, I think the mistake the Eagles made is saying we're going to spend a second round pick on a guy when and then they were like, we want to do what the Packers did. That's not actually what the Packers did. What the Packers did was they identified guys that could develop late and then gave them time to develop.
What about the Patriots, though?
I mean, who is it besides Garoppolo?
Oh, they did it with somebody else. It didn't work out as well. Was it Castle?
They tried with Ryan Mallett and failed miserably.
Mallett, that was, you're right, but they did, I'm saying, but they did try. Wasn't he relatively high?
Yes, Jacoby. Jacoby's the other one for New England.
Yeah, they did try, is my point.
When they drafted Jacoby, it was fairly high. But yeah, if you're trying to be the Patriots, then sure, I can see it. But if you're trying to be the Packers, depends on how the Packers did.
Well, that's my point. It's like, okay, so I guess
Packers did it later.
I'm not saying trying to be the Packers or whatever. I'm just trying to say, would you draft a quarterback? Again, right now, I don't know you want to mess with Carson Wentz that way after what happened with Jalen Hurts. So you might not want to do a high pick, especially because you already have Eason on the roster. But I guess I'm curious. It's like if a guy like, boy, I don't even know who to bring up. Kellen Mond would probably be
third. Yeah, the top five are supposed to all go off in the 15. Who's the
– Well, sixth is the guy from Stanford. I actually saw somebody had him go at 32, weirdly.
Jeez.
It was Peter Schrager at NFL.com had what is it?
If there's six quarterbacks in the first round, that's the best thing that could ever happen to the Colts.
Yeah, agreed. I'm trying to – who is that? What is the name of that quarterback? You would know.
No, I think all Stanford quarterbacks look the same to me.
David Mills. or Davis Mills. I'm sorry.
I can't believe I didn't think of him.
There was some late hype on him from what I'm hearing, or just reading, I should say, you know, on the internet, like everybody else, that he might climb into the second or back end of the first. Again, I don't know that it happened.
That feels more like the guy who's going to, who everyone, like, with apologies to Jacob Eason, that feels like a Jacob Eason where everybody says he's going to go in the second. He ends up going a lot later than that.
It could. My point isn't that they should pick that guy. My point is, like, I think Kellen Mond is probably the best example. Texas A&M, interesting guy. Kind of in that, like, I'm reading one, somebody kind of complained or compared him to Kaepernick, mobile, big arm, that kind of thing. If he's around in the fourth round, what do you think?
I'd be more okay with that if they had signed more free agents.
Why?
Because they have very clear needs that they have to fill, and they left them to the draft. It's full circle now. Like, they put the pressure on the draft to fill these needs that haven't been filled yet. And so because they did that, it's harder for me to use the spot on a quarterback. Now,
do you think luxury pick a little bit would be a quarterback?
Yeah.
At that point? Okay.
Yeah. And you might be hurting yourself elsewhere. Now, in the moment, would I probably say that? No, because usually when you say that right after the draft, you're wrong. Darius Leonard would remind all of us that whatever people say after the draft is really stupid. But just going off of, they left themselves needs. And what's left on the market isn't anything more than a temporary solution. And have, I think, pretty clearly defined the ceilings on what they could help.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think you got to fill those needs. I don't know what the order is, but you need to get players at those positions. You just have to.
So my question is, I'm playing devil's advocate because I generally agree with what you're saying. But after the draft or before the draft, you sign Russell Okung and Justin Houston.
Then I'm more open to it.
Okay. So you want to fill those needs.
If needs are addressed, then fine. But I've been operating this whole offseason like they've signed stop gaps in case the guy that they draft isn't ready at left tackle.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think that's what's happening too.
And then the other one is, I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't fully understand what's going on at defensive end. But I still think they need one, even if Justin Houston signs. But I'm more likely to feel okay with you taking a luxury pick if but, you know, again, like this is another good example of me being wrong and why it's hard for me to like have definitive takes. Last year I said Julian Blackman was an interesting pick because I didn't think he was going to play until October. And he was ready the second week of the season.
To be fair, I think that surprised a lot of people.
Well, if you ask people on Twitter, it surprised no one except us because we're idiots.
Oh, no. Well, we were going off what we were told, which was hopefully by October. And then he just kind of went quicker. It's not like, I don't think you and I made up a deadline.
No, I don't, but that's the way it was taken. So,
I didn't know much about Julian Blackman going into the draft. So I didn't know what his timeline was until the Colts said probably October.
There's a lot of stuff. Well, the reason we didn't know anything about Julian Blackman, and this is going to be interesting in this draft too, is he wasn't part of the pre-draft process because he tore his. And right now, there's a lot of people getting a lot of play because of what they've done in the pre-draft process. And in some cases, that's not going to matter. The tape's going to matter.
Yeah. And the other interesting part is some guys didn't put tape together in 2020. They either opted out or they're you know, the Pac-12 played, what, three or four games? Like, there are some guys who didn't get a chance to put a lot on tape.
From a draft strategy standpoint, one of the things that you and I have been talking about is I'm curious to see what Chris – I don't know if he'll give us a straight answer on this, because it could reveal draft plan a little bit. But I saw a report that somebody with a top 10 pick said they downgraded people who opted out.
Yeah, I wonder about that too.
Number one, I do not believe they downgraded Jamar Chase. I don't believe that at all. They could tell me, they could show it to me on their board and I'd be like, you're lying to me. You're going to switch the board as soon as I leave. But if teams do feel that way about players who aren't Jamar Chase, I wonder if that would make sort of a money ballish opportunity to capitalize on other teams giving up on guys. And I'm going to try to ask Chris Ballard about it. You never know what you're going to get in a press conference. And I don't know that I'm going to get an answer, but it just interests me. It's an interesting, like, if you're convinced that a guy based off a junior tape that a guy and you think you maybe could get him around later, that's great, right? That's great.
Yeah, totally. Let me ask you one more before we kind of wrap this up. One more like big picture draft thing. What was your impression of the negative reaction to Trevor Lawrence likes other things outside of football? I was curious what your thoughts were on that, because there were some comparisons to Andrew. The reason I ask is it's indie related, and that there were some comparisons to Andrew Luck.
I generally don't love when people do that. I think Aaron Rodgers is very interested in things outside of football. I mean, for goodness sakes, the dude's hosting Jeopardy right now.
He's doing. I could do a podcast on this. Week two has been significantly better than week one. Like he's like, he's more in the zone. He's more confident. He's making like quips. He's great. He's great week two. Week two is like, at first I was like, hey, he's okay. Week one, week two, he's been fantastic.
You know, there's guys that are, well, shoot, Drew Brees and Tom Brady both have like business empires outside of football. My question is, and I don't know, I haven't read the Trevor Lawrence things. So I don't know what he said about this. But the question for me is, like, I would have some questions if I didn't think he was a I must succeed at all costs guy. Because those are the guys who've been the best in the NFL. I would have some questions. Does that mean I wouldn't draft him? I don't know. But I would want to know. Because, I mean, Jim, you're trying to draw me out on this particular opinion.
A little bit. But, I knew what was happening when I asked that question. A little bit.
I think I can hint at it without making people too mad at me. Andrew Luck made a decision that I don't think the other three guys I mentioned earlier would have made. And my has always been that they played football for different reasons. And so if you are motivated in different ways. And so I think if you take him, I would just want to know. I would want to know if that's how he felt about it. I'd probably ask him if 10 years in, could you see yourself walking away 10 years in if you're successful? Or do you want to play till you're 40?
Let me give you the quote, and you can kind of, yeah, because I know you haven't read it, so this is actually perfect. You can hear it. So it's hard to explain that because I want people to know that I'm passionate about what I do and it's really important to me. But, and this is a broken up quote, so ellipses, I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder that everyone's out to get me and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I just don't have that. I can't manufacture that and I don't want to. And I think people mistake that for being a competitor, he said. I think that's unhealthy to a certain extent, just as always thinking that you've got to prove somebody wrong. You've got to do more. You've got to be better. That's the quote. That scare you off Trevor Lawrence a little bit?
It just sounds so different from like the other great quarterbacks. I think that's what.
So this is interesting. You're not scared off of, like, as a person, you're fine with that. You like him, but as like a, will he be, is a draft evaluator, you're a little scared of it because it's not, you can't comp it to anybody else that's highly successful. Is that accurate?
That's the biggest thing is like, think about how much the prove people wrong is a part of like the story of every great quarterback. Tom Brady, then the 6th round pick thing, Aaron Rodgers getting stuck in a draft room. Drew Brees having people tell him his shoulder was shot and he was never going to play, and then drafting Philip Rivers. I don't know what the right thing is with Philip Rivers, but just Philip Rivers is sort of legendarily competitive.
Oh, the arm angle thing is one part of it. That's for sure.
Peyton Manning. I think it'd be hard to say Peyton Manning wasn't insanely driven to be the best and proved everybody was the best. Joe Montana. Picked too late. Joe Montana still gets mad if someone jokingly calls him assistant quarterback. I saw it happen on the Dan Patrick Show during Super Bowl week. Like, so, I mean, I don't think it means there's anything wrong with Trevor Lawrence. It's just that that's such a, for the great quarterbacks in the NFL, that's been such a consistent trait that it just makes me wonder a little bit. Now, I don't know if I can identify exactly what that is with Patrick Mahomes yet. I don't know if he has the Because even him dropping to 10 isn't really a big part of his story.
No.
So maybe that would make me reevaluate.
Yeah,
that would make me reevaluate a little bit. But like Russell Wilson, too short, got picked late, ticked him off. Like, I don't know. It's just interesting because it seems like that's like the sometimes when you go through all these quarterbacks, they're such different sizes and skill levels and all this stuff. And sometimes it feels like that's like the link between all.
X factor, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Marino, fantastically gifted, but people passed him up for far lesser quarterbacks. Elway couldn't win the big one forever. You know, like they all, this is a part of all those guys' stories. So I don't know. It would just make me want to explore it more with him. If I still have him evaluated as Andrew Luck player, I'm still going to take it. But
this is music to Colts fans' ears who were fearing Trevor Lawrence in the division for years. And now you're like, yeah, he'll be gone in 10 years and he won't be that good.
In thinking about quarterback play over the years, that always struck me as like maybe the defining like link. I don't know what it is with Mahomes yet, but there's so many of these guys have this just giant chip on their shoulder and they use it to fuel them.
If you watch the with the next pick, the latest episode, they showed the Eagles picking Carson Wentz and they showed Frank Reich on the phone with him. And the clip that they showed was saying, this is about your competitiveness and your toughness is what he said. Like those are the words that he used when he picked him. And those may be not the, after you hear what Trevor Lawrence said, those might not be the words that you would use. Right. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's hard. I like guys that have outside interests. I think it's a good way to live a balanced, healthy lifestyle. For the most part is to have not football be, you know, 100%. I think there's plenty of guys on the Colts who would testify to that, whether it's family or whether it's something else in their lives that, you know.
Yeah, I think from a personal standpoint, it's a terrible thing to have your career be the most important thing to you. That's not going to turn out. I think most people would agree that's not going to turn out well when you're 60.
So again, and maybe Andrew Luck is maybe an example for the good. Again, if Andrew Luck was healthy, and didn't have all the injuries, maybe he's still playing and playing at a really high level. And that mentality didn't hurt him at all. I mean, he was still a great quarterback, did a lot of great things for the Colts and was great. So maybe Trevor Lawrence can be Andrew Luck. And then if they can protect him a little bit better and he protects himself a little bit better, maybe he has a 15, 20 year career where this is the way he feels and he's still great. So I don't know. It's less concerning to me than I think it is for you, but I definitely understand where there is some alarm. I guess if that's
yeah, it's for me it's less of like I downgrade him as a personal flaw. It's more just like that might be the thing that I'd be trying to find in quarterbacks if I was evaluating.
No, and I get that. I honestly do. That's why I brought it up. I thought it was an interesting question. I don't think there's a right answer either. So I think it's good. But I think that'll be it for us in terms of the podcast and our draft. Kind of, I think we outlined it pretty well in terms of what we think is going to happen next week. I can't decide yet. We'll either do one previewing Ballard, but I think more likely is we'll wait till Chris Ballard talks and kind of break it down on the podcast. That'll be next week. And then the week after we're going to do two, we'll do kind of one. Maybe we'll just do the one. I don't know yet. I can't decide, but like we'll that one will be the fake mock draft. If there's not anything else. And then last year, like we said, we did the late night podcast after every round, after every day of the draft, we did the podcast. We will do that again. That will happen again this year. So that's what you have looking forward to. Plenty of draft coverage. We're about to ramp it up big time in the next couple weeks here with draft coverage. So you guys have all that to look forward to. Hope you do. Hope you read it. Hope you listen. And thanks for listening to this episode and talk to you later.